Hello, I'm Lucy Blue and this is the Dive and Dig In-Depth podcast, letting you hear some of the highlights from the full interviews we featured in our first series. In this episode, we're going to explore the challenges and threats that maritime cultural heritage faces today and how we can begin to find more sustainable approaches to addressing these challenges. First, here's Dr. John Henderson from the University of Edinburgh, who told me about his project that attempts to tackle these issues head on.
So I'm currently the project lead of a large network called the Rising from the Depths Network, which is funded by the Global Challenges Research Fund, which is essentially aid money, but it's about making people's lives better through using heritage. So what we're doing is seeing how the submerged and coastal heritage of Kenya, Tanzania, Mozambique and Madagascar can help create sustainable growth in the region. How can it make people's lives better? How can you create social, cultural and economic benefits from marine cultural heritage? And what we're doing is using a really sort of wide catch-all definition of marine cultural heritage. And it's basically all of the space, coast and sea, that's affected by human action. So it's human action on the sea. In the past, what people have done on coasts, how they've interacted in the sea in the past, how that can inform, you know, management plans in the future, but also help communities in the region today.
So, I mean, that's quite a novel approach, isn't it, really? Because quite often as archaeologists, maritime or otherwise, we zoom in, survey a site, and don't necessarily think about the current context. We don't necessarily think about communicating with the people who live in these societies. So in some ways, that's really quite a different approach. And why do you think that approach is really going to make a difference to the sustainability of the cultural heritage in the region, let alone the people?
Well, I think that there's a number of issues here. I think one more widely, the reason I became interested in it is the idea of the importance of marine archaeology, and we talked about this, and why it should be funded and why governments should care about it. And for me, the future of it's not just about individual wrecks or individual projects or discoveries. It's about this raising awareness of the importance of the sea to human societies today, to human development in the past, and how we need to incorporate some of the knowledge that we've created over millennia to inform what we're going to do in the future. And I think that can create a real step change in the importance of marine archaeology. You know, prioritizing, if you like, all human interaction in the sea in all its forms makes us a much more important discipline. And it's a way that we can show to governments the real value that we have as a subject. So on one side, it's that marine archaeology. The other side is in an area like East Africa. You've got one of the most developed coastlines in the world at the moment, in the sense that there are lots of governments interested in building super ports, doing offshore work. The cities are being developed. And a lot of this development is actually funded by aid money, which is interestingly enough. But it's not taking any account of marine cultural heritage. And indeed, they would think, well, why should we? And what we're trying to show is that if you don't take account of the heritage and the context of what's happening in these regions as you develop them, then the development you do is not going to be sustainable because people aren't going to do it. And this is what's fundamental to the centre of all development are people. There's, you know, culture drives development. And if you just try and come up with scientific solutions or architectural solutions or legal solutions, and you don't engage with the people and the heritage that's there, then it's not going to be successful and it's not going to be sustainable. So that's what we're trying to do. And the way this works, this network, is we have about £800,000, or we've now allocated it all. And we're funding 27 projects across the region, which are using marine cultural heritage to develop some sort of change in that area. The only thing that links the projects is the use of marine cultural heritage. And it's everything from, you know, working with community groups to use the heritage maybe for tourism outreach, to come some form of income, to top-down approaches where we're employing, you know, lawyers to look at aid agreements and how marine cultural heritage should be part of them. And what's interesting about this is actually that is the aid, for example, coming from the UK, aid money, if we're giving aid to a country, is it has to be ethical and it has to respect people's human rights. Now, access to heritage is a human right. So if you don't pay attention to heritage when you're doing development, then it's unethical. And then you turn around and say, well, we shouldn't be funding things that are unethical. At which point the governments go, oh, right, okay, so maybe we should start doing this. And what's the benefit of it? We're funding a number of projects, actually three projects, an area called Lamu, which is one of the best preserved Swahili towns in East Africa. And it's also a World Heritage Site. Very famous, absolutely beautiful place. And much of the community's income is dependent on that tourism trade. Despite that, they're now building a massive superport just next to it, £14.5 billion development. And the local community have been protesting against this because it's affecting their fishing and it's affecting their tourism. And the original plans didn't take account of the heritage, despite UNESCO saying it's going to damage the World Heritage element and status of this. It was ignored. So we are showing how heritage could help the sustainable development of this. Now, we're not saying we stop this work taking place. We say for it to be ethical, it needs to take into account the opinions of the people that are there. Now, there have been protests from local communities there, and there's now been a realisation, actually. The Kenyan High Court in 2018 awarded £17.5 million in compensation to the fishermen in Lamu who'd lost livelihood because of the dredging that had been going on for the superport, and made the recommendation that the communities themselves should have been part of the consultation in the beginning of the project. And that's a major breakthrough, because that's changing the way the development's done to take account of people's views. What heritage does is it allows people to enter into those discourses and talk about it in almost a safe space, if you like, and you know, and engage developers. And that's one of the things that we're sort of, well, one of the things, it's a major element through a lot of the work that's taking place in East Africa, is using heritage to demonstrate the value of the communities and respecting the community's traditions. So in Madagascar, the UK government a few years ago put in £5 million into a project to improve fishing in Madagascar. And they built these fishing platforms that local communities could use to increase their catch. But the local communities never used them. So, you know, the UK press went, oh, £5 million wasted on, you know, on this development that local communities didn't use. But the key thing was, when we looked at it, nobody asked the local communities if they wanted these fishing platforms. The science said, yes, it made fishing better. But the whole cultural traditions of fishing in these areas, that's not the way you do it. Cultural, you know, the way that you practice fishing is a deeply embedded practice with social and ritual and, you know, meaning. And that's obvious to us as archaeologists. It's obvious to anthropologists, but it hasn't always been obvious to developers. So again, it's using that material to that data set from the past to help inform these future practices. And the key to rising from the depths has always been community consultation and co-creating approaches with local groups. And that's what's exciting about this new kind of way of working for me in these areas, is it's not about archaeologists going in, excavating the site and just leaving. It's about finding about the wider impact of the work that you're doing. And you can still do that work, and that's still part of, you know, what interests you as an archaeologist. But the wider social and economic implications of it are actually quite rewarding, and can go in directions that you didn't expect, which can then influence the research itself. And I think that one of the things that you may have discussed before, but I'm also involved with, is the Ocean Decade Heritage Network, which is about bringing archaeologists together to show what our data can do to inform future strategies of management for the ocean.
No, absolutely. In fact, the UN Decade of Ocean Science is basically happening this decade. And the network that you and others have created is really making a difference. Maybe we could just talk a little bit about what this means in terms of sort of joined up thinking, which is basically the messages that you're trying to get across through the Risings project.
Well, the Decade for Ocean Science is a UN initiative. It's lasting from 2021 to 2030, and it's creating a framework of stakeholders and academics and researchers to improve the health of the oceans, basically because healthy oceans are absolutely fundamental to human survival. And without healthy oceans, we'll all be dead. And it's absolutely that important. SDG 14, the Sustainable Development Goal 14, is at the key of this, which is about sustainable use of the ocean resources and protecting the ocean to keep it clean. And there's five sort of main elements to that. One is about unsustainable fishing practices. There's the loss of coastal and ocean habitats. There's invasive species. There's pollution. And the main one, one of the key-ish elements, is the effects of climate change. So I went to, I've spoken at the UN about this, which was exciting a few years ago, and then went to the first meeting of the Decade of Ocean Scientists. And all the main climate guys were there, all the main ocean scientists were there. And archaeology, even though it was being held in the National Museum in Denmark, in Copenhagen, there was no real role for archaeologists. We were seen very much as the add-on, the exotic add-on that are part of the dissemination and a part of it helping reach people, not that we were producing data that was useful. And this is where the Ocean Decade Network came from, was to show that actually we need to be part of the discussions from the beginning, not just at the end as a kind of dissemination, oh look, isn't this fun, the public like it, but that our data can actually inform practices. And I think there was a realization during that meeting from some of the scientists in particular that yes, oh, I hadn't thought about archaeology in those terms. And archaeologists are often left out of these discussions. Natural heritage, for some reason, is always seen as an important part, but cultural heritage, despite the idea, and I go back to the point I made before, that none of this works without people. People are at the centre of development, and you need people on board to make it work. So you need to understand the heritage and the context of the place you're working in.
Lots of food for thought there from Dr. Henderson. I am, however, keen to learn more about the specific approach that the Risings project has taken, particularly adopting a co-creation approach involving local maritime communities from the outset. One of the leads in this field is my colleague Dr. Ichu Mbaki. Ichu is based at Dar es Salaam University in Tanzania. He heads up a number of projects along the coast of Tanzania, and I asked him how he felt the co-creation approach was generating more impactful results.
Co-creation approach that we have been taking in Tanzania, and especially along the coast of Tanzania, dealing with various aspects of heritage, both tangible and intangible, has been very beneficial. It's beneficial in the sense that people feel as part and parcel of the activities, the research activities that they are being taken, contrary from the previous undertakings where they are considering themselves as assistant to the researchers. Now, with the co-creation, collaborative research, where the local community are at the center of research, they are the leader of the activities that are being taking part, they feel like we are doing our work, we are protecting our heritage, we are given voices, and our voices will be heard by other people. This is amazing. And through that perspective, the local people themselves are willing to give even details which they would not give if they are not part and parcel of the project. And they are also exposing some of the sites that are not accessible to the general public, but because they are being engaged and they think they are part and parcel of the project, they think the project is very beneficial to their day-to-day activities, they are taking the lead and they're exposing some of the sites which are under normal circumstances they would hide them. But another key issue which is very much related to the co-creation approach we have been taking here in Tanzania, and particularly with the Bahari Yetu Urithi Wetu project, is letting the local people map some of the sites and identify some of the items which they think they are important to be protected. So we researchers have been going to approach sites, to approach heritage research with our ideas in mind. This is what we are looking for. This is what we want to document. This is what we think is important, which is totally different from what the local people consider to be important for them. For instance, from the legal point of view in Tanzania, the ocean and its contents has never been part and parcel of what is considered as heritage. It's not in the law, it's not in the policies, it's nowhere at all. But the local people, the ocean is their number one heritage, because this is where they get almost everything they want. They get fish, they sell fish, they get money, and they can use that money to subsidize their day-to-day needs. And this is really important. Therefore, I would recommend that all sorts of heritage research they will become beneficial and important if from the start they engage the local people and make local people at the forefront of every activity planned in the project implementation.
Ocean is the number one heritage. These are really powerful words, and hence the name of the project Itchu mentioned, Bahari Yetu Yurithi Wetu, which literally means our ocean, our heritage. Another inspired approach that he and his student Claudia, also known as Chemical, the Tanzanian rap artist, have been developing to raise awareness of maritime cultural heritage is through music. Next, I spoke to Claudia about her music and her career in archaeology.
So the Bahari Yetu song is part of the Musicalizing Marine Cultural Heritage, which is jointly funded by Rising from the Depth Network and the University of St. Andrews, but with financial support from the British Council. So the song forms part of the community and public awareness raising activities on the challenges facing people in the coastal zone. Well, to me, these songs are of great impact. First, because of the message they carry. A song like Bahari Yetu, educate, protect, and promote the importance of seas and ocean to our daily lives. But also, these songs teaches people, particularly children and youth, to take care of their environment, as well as to have pride of their heritage. But furthermore, I'm very proud of doing these songs, and I'm very happy to be doing them because these cultural songs that people think they are old songs, they have been able to get premium releases in big TV and radio station, inside and outside Tanzania, but also they have bigger outreach in terms of viewers, downloads, streams, and bloggers. Many blogs have been blogging about these kind of songs, and so they have been able to get, you know, a huge airtime. Yeah. So this is very different compared to academic papers. So you can refer this to Musicalizing Heritage and Heritageizing Music article by Dr. Ichumbak and Claudia myself. But the most important thing is these songs are played in clubs, travel buses, bus stops, town centers, and everywhere. You could hear Bahari Yetu, you could hear Kilwa Yetu everywhere you go. Which for me it's a bit strange because the songs that you can hear everywhere are those clubbing songs, youth songs, you know. But even these kind of songs have been able to get that kind of airtime. So to me, this is a great achievement, and this is due to the fact that many musicians concentrate on making money. And such simpler messages like romances, crabbing, moods, songs, and all that, rather than educating people. So to me, inspiring and seeing people and see people learning from my music is one of the best feeling ever. So I can say, my call to other musicians: it's they should not always try to look on the other side of music, on the happy side, on the romance side. They should also try to look on the other stuff, because people still want to be educated, people still want to be inspired, and these are kind of songs that inspire, motivate them, but also educate them. Yeah, it's not only about the cultural aspect. You can sing about anything, but in each song you sing, you can try to look on the other part, like people should get something. They should be educated from what they listen to you. So as Chemical, I have so many songs that are there for money, are there for entertaining people and all that. But as Claudia, I also use Chemical to produce other songs which are there, are sincerely there to promote people. I mean, to promote our heritage. And as you know, heritage is something which is very important to us, and it has value to our generations, to and the next generation. So it's important to protect it and to preserve it, but also to, you know, to promote it. Yeah.
So inspiring and such reach, incredible. I'm sure we'll hear more of Chemical and her awesome music and messages. I hope you've enjoyed this Dive and Dig in Depth podcast, supported by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that promotes maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. If you want to hear more about the exciting world of maritime archaeology, then join me for the next episode when my colleague Kathy Giograndi speaks with electrical engineer Dr. Marty Klein. Marty developed the first commercial side-scan sonar, an instrument that uses acoustic signals that allow scientists to map the seabed. He will explain how this technology was developed and has advanced over recent years. Join me then.